And I want to welcome everybody to the Health Commission meeting for August 10th, 2020. Just to take you through a couple of quick little housekeeping measures. Please keep your phone, please keep your connection on mute unless you're needing to speak. If you have your camera on, please give a visual cue to Mary Jean that you would like to speak. If you don't have your camera on, please just briefly indicate that you would like to speak, and then wait for Mary Jean to give you the floor to speak. And if you'd like to leave public comment, please give public comment by going via email at mcoughlin@co.slo.ca.us. And with that, I hand the meeting over to our chairperson, Mary Jean Sage.
Thank you, Mike. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order this evening. Thank you all for being with us. It's that time when we will offer to do public comments. Since we are virtual, public comments should have been emailed in, and Mike just gave the instructions how you can make a public comment during the meeting if you need to. Are there any public comments that you need to read, Mike?
Currently, no public comment.
Okay, well, that was quick. We will just go on to the next item then, which is information for any updates on any of our previous meetings. Do any of the commissioners have any updates to make at this point? I know our last meeting, we haven't had presentations of such. It's been quite a while. I do have one update, however, and it's from actually a couple of years ago. You will probably all remember that in 2016, we did a letter of support to support a grant application Public Health was submitting to Medi-Cal or DHCS for the Dental Health Dental Transformation Initiative. And we were successful in getting that grant, and we've done a number of things with the grant. I had Mike send out a little bit of a package that describes some of the things that are going on with that. And right now, the state is considering a one-year extension for all the 1115 Medi-Cal waiver programs, with the exception of Domain 4, which was the domain that allowed us here in the county to do our virtual dental clinics. And we did set up several at the schools, and a private entity is also doing or proposing at least to do one out in Chandon. So they're asking for our support to make comment to the state to please include Domain 4, which is the virtual dental clinic, in the one-year expansion. Since we got the notice too late for us to get this on the meeting tonight as an agenda item, I would like to propose, unless there's some comment from some of the commissioners, I would like to go ahead and, on behalf of the Health Commission, submit public comment in the form of a letter supporting the continuation of Domain 4 in that. So if somebody would prefer we didn't, why, please feel free to speak up or let me know via email after the meeting as far as that goes. Otherwise, in the next day or two, I will go ahead and do a letter on behalf of the Health Commission to support the continuance of the Domain 4, which again is the virtual dental practice. We actually were able to reach out to quite a few youngsters with this program, and it's worked quite well. We're in six different schools with that program. So if we can continue it, especially in this time when it's impossible for most of us to get into a healthcare provider or a dental provider's office of any kind, if it could continue, that would be great. So, okay. Since I don't see any objection from anybody, I will go ahead and do that. And I will see that you all get a copy of the comments that we made. So if there are no other updates from our previous topics, I think we'll turn to Dr. Rosen, who will do our public health report for this evening. Thanks for being with us, Rick. Did we lose him, Mike?
Dr. Rosen, I see that your mute is still on. Let me unmute. Are you there, Dr. Rosen? Are you there, Dr. Rosen? The joys of technology. Dr. Rosen, you may want to try connecting in again. We're not receiving any audio from you.
So it looks like he hung up there. So why don't we do this, Mike, while he is connecting in again, why don't we move forward and go ahead and do our commissioner updates, and when Dr. Rosen gets back with us, we'll go back to him, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Who has had any Zoom meetings or any of their committees get together in any way? Commissioner Raymond, Adult Services Council, Matt, I think?
Yes, they did meet, and the speaker was Brandy Snow. She's an advocate or attorney for Central California Legal Services. So she was talking about medical debt, you know, and as people are now having issues of possible debt and how to handle that, she gave the presentation on, you know, what needed to be done. As long as you can go online and find Central California Legal Services, you can get any information, and I will send that phone number. I'm sure I wrote it down here somewhere. But anyway, she gave an hour presentation on all the different aspects that they can be supportive to people who have medical debt, and you know, even people who have money can access this service. But the people that don't have any funds, they can get it help they need to find out what they can do once they've been presented with a bill.
Interesting.
Let me see if I have that phone number. When I find it, I will share that with Michael.
Okay. You can send it out to everyone.
Can you all hear me now?
Yes, Rick, we can.
Okay, excellent.
Right. Go ahead.
Okay, so I don't have too much new to report. We have been, one development is that we have been working our way through waiver applications from elementary schools around the county. So that process began over this past week. We've received about 12 applications at this point, and we are responding. I might actually be able to find you the exact number. We are issuing our first responses to those applications. And they're all of them are from private schools at this point. And we, in terms of communications that have come out from the California Department of Public Health, this week and last, there has been an update to the guidance for K through 12 education, and on Friday afternoon, the guidance for higher education was released, and that included In addition, in there was guidance for youth sports, so that there have been answers provided to many of the questions that have been burning around the community related to education. COVID outbreaks occurring in congregate care settings. And one positive bit of news I have to report related to the homeless population. One is that the spread of COVID-19 has been minimal in that population. But in addition, in Paso Robles, they set up an outdoor encampment with quite a bit of support for homeless folks who are living in the riverbed in that area. And that is a nice change because they've been trying to clear out the riverbed due to fire risk and now have an alternative location for those folks uh-huh. to go. So I think that's a good model from our point of view. That's it. That's all I can think of to report.
So a couple questions from me, and then I'll turn it over to the others. Explain or tell us a little bit about the waiver applications for the elementary school. What are they asking for?
So the idea is schools can open for K through 6 education. They must apply, they must submit an application in counties who are on the monitoring list, which applies to us. Uh-huh. So we are currently in the process of reviewing those applications. And basically the process asks for a plan, what you will do in terms of disinfection practices. The schools must identify a liaison to work with us and to work with families and staff at the school related to any questions that come up regarding COVID. Some other items are how to respond if either a student or a staff member is diagnosed with COVID-19. And part of it is how you will respond in the event that either a cohort is significantly impacted or the school as a whole is significantly impacted. The idea being that potentially a school would have to, the guidance from the state is that if 5% of the school's population becomes infected with COVID-19, then it should shut down to on-campus education at that point and go virtual. So those are the sorts of issues that we're looking at and that must be addressed in the plans.
So then will public health make the decision about whether the application is accepted or not? Who makes that decision?
Yes, so we make that decision. So what we're doing is going through the applications right now, identifying any deficiencies that have come up. And we're in the process of sending back the first group of 4 applications that we received to address their deficiencies, which should be fairly straightforward.
Do we have any concern? I know there the numbers of positive among children was significantly increased during the month of July. I'm not sure that, have we seen that in San Luis County?
Good question. Let me see if I can sort that out.
At the one time I looked, which was a week or so ago, I didn't note that we really had, but I know one of our neighboring counties, Stanislaus County, had some really significant numbers. And then it's been in the national news in the last few days also about the increased numbers of children who are testing positive.
So let's see, by age group, so cumulative numbers to date, the 0 to 17 age range accounts for 227 out of 2,254 cases.
Okay.
That's
a pretty low percentage.
Yes. And the question is, what does the trend look like? I'll see if I can. I'm not sure if I'll be able to get that granular with the trend.
Okay. Well, it doesn't look like we've seen a significant increase here then. What about the last time we talked with you, and then I noticed that it's been in the news media a little bit lately, about the issue of the difference in the data because this, there was some kind of a glitch at the state. Have we resolved that?
So it's in the works. So yes, we have, we did see a big bolus of results come to us through CalReady, through the state reporting platform, particularly over this past weekend.
Okay. All right. Any other commissioners have any questions for Dr. Rosen? No?
I've got a couple.
Oh, hi, Tamar. Yes, go ahead. Please.
Dr. Rosen, just a couple more questions on the school waiver piece. Wanted
yes.
to find out, in addition to the state's guidelines, does the county have any additional guidelines that they're putting in place that schools would need to meet for those waivers? That's my first question.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So we haven't really looked for anything that hasn't already been identified in the state guidance. One of the things that is not in the state's waiver application per se, but is identified in the school guidance and is important to us is to address flu vaccination, which is going to be a big issue in the fall. So we are asking that schools at least touch on that. That's really the only issue I can think of that's not already explicitly addressed in the state's waiver application directive.
Okay, thank you. And then this, my second question is, for those schools that the public health department will grant the waiver to, will there be any sort of monitoring that will occur in place to make sure that those schools are, you know, complying and doing what they said that they would do in terms of sanitation measures and checks and everything?
Right. I would say there will be intermittent monitoring, and there will be ongoing communication with the school liaisons. Those folks they identify as their go-to COVID-19 people.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
So Tamar brings up another question for me, Dr. Rosen. So if you're asking the schools to address flu vaccinations, what would you be asking them to do?
That is an outstanding question. So we want, part of it is just communication and really stressing the importance of getting vaccinated against flu this year.
Okay.
We are in the very early phases of trying to build out our plan for flu vaccination. I think it's very important that we get as many people vaccinated for flu as we can this year in particular. So what exactly that looks like, I'm not sure, but we may, you know, we may want school cooperation and point of distribution exercises around the county, and some of those might, you know, we might want to do that at a school, for example, okay, or at schools. But we haven't gotten into any details yet with respect to that.
Well, is it even possible that public health would get enough flu vaccine that they could do point of service distribution?
Yeah, so we are working on that. We have been ordering large quantities of flu vaccine. One issue is that there's sort of basically two rounds of flu vaccine delivery. The first round, so presumably, is going to happen fairly early in the flu season, a second round probably won't happen until November, December, which makes it a little more, a little more challenging, but we've already requested large quantities of flu vaccine to the extent that we can, and my understanding is we're going to have to make another order, essentially, in the November timeframe.
Well, I think that there are lots of kids that don't get flu vaccines simply because they're feeling well, mom and dad don't make an appointment to go to the pediatrician to just get the flu vaccine. If they're there for another visit of some kind, and the flu vaccine is offered, then I think they do it. But so few parents actually make an appointment just to get the child vaccinated. So if it's done at the school or someplace where the child is already, and it's easy for them to get that, that might be advantageous to getting the numbers up there. It's the number of kids that we could vaccinate.
Right. Agreed.
And to that point, I know that there's just an overall issue in kids and families potentially missing vaccines and the regular vaccine dosing due to everything. Will there be any sort of check on the schools that have applied for the waivers to ensure that kids are up to date on their immunizations, of those kids who are enrolled?
Good question. Yeah, that's not built into the waiver application process.
Okay.
Well, we don't need an outbreak of measles during the coronavirus, for heaven's sakes.
That's for sure.
It's just, I know one of the...
Maybe that could be a strong encouragement to the schools if waivers are granted, to be able to strongly encourage that schools check that their students are up to date with their vaccinations.
Right.
So, Rick, would this be someplace, because remember we talked about how the Health Commission could help this whole process, and way back when vaccinations were an issue, and I don't know, Tamar, if you've made any headway with the public information officer, everybody, it's just a stressful time for everybody, but would this be some way that we could be helpful in bringing that point forward to the forefront?
Certainly in the area of flu vaccination, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it would be, once our plan is better defined as we get closer to October, I think that will be helpful.
Okay, so maybe if you can just keep us in the loop as you are putting that plan together and let us know where we could be helpful, where we could assist in any way.
Sounds good. I would be happy to.
Okay. Any other commissioners have any questions for Dr. Rosen?
Mary Jean?
Yes. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, going back to the school waiver, is there a requirement to do some sort of scheduled, maybe accelerated testing of the kids to see if they're really approaching that 5% threshold?
So we don't have the capacity, the public health department don't have the capacity to participate in surveillance testing for the schools. So it makes it tricky if you're comparing schools to other populations, you know, like, say, skilled nursing facilities. I think it presents a challenge in terms of prioritization, I would say, and given the constraints, the limitations on testing reagents and so forth. So, the long answer is it's hard to say. The short answer is we are working with the County Office of Education and the various schools through the application process to encourage them to explore, sort out how they can facilitate testing, and also to consider surveillance testing for their staff.
That would seem to be really crucial, Rick, particularly given the current concern about COVID-19 spreading rather quietly in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Kids then taking it out into the wider, older population.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this 5% threshold, based on any sort of achievable reality.
Right. I think we'll find out.
So might we allow some of these waivers and wait and see how prevalent the virus is in the schools, and just hope that we get some sort of an early warning signal.
Right. So it's not, most of the applications we've received have been from smaller schools. And it is, again, limited to K through 6. So I think the numbers will be fairly small.
So at this point, and maybe I missed that earlier, Rick, the only schools eligible for waivers are K through 6.
Correct.
Okay.
And thus far we've received 11 applications, and all of the schools are relatively small compared to your typical public school.
Mm-hmm.
So if it, didn't mean to interrupt here, Bob, but so if a school is really K through 8, can they apply just for their K through 6?
Correct.
Top off those other 2 years?
Yes.
Okay. And we're going to let them self-report the 5%?
No, no. So that's based on laboratory testing.
So it's laboratory testing, but then we have to wait for the test results to come back, and then it has to be reported to the school. So it could be a week out before we find that they're over 5%.
It could be, depending on where the test is performed. Although the major labs around here are doing reasonably well in terms of turnaround time. So Quest, LabCorp, Westpac. The turnaround time, for the most part, has been more like 2 to 3 days. At the state sponsor, at the Optum testing sites, the OptumServe testing site, I should say, in Atascadero, as of this week, which I didn't mention, the turnaround time has been typically about 3 days. There was a period of time where they were having difficulty with turnaround for results about a week and a half ago, but that has since resolved. So I think for the most part, we're doing okay with turnaround time at the major, working with the major providers for COVID testing.
So, Bob, I'm not trying to take up your time here. I'll turn it back to you in a minute. But sorry, you guys. So this leads me back to one of the things we talked about last month on this, is the information that's going out to the people when they're tested. So a kid's not feeling well, they take him to be tested. And that 3 days before they get their test results to find out that they're positive, they've gone back to school, they've gone to practice sports, they've gone to the park, they've gone to do something else.
So during that time period, they would be directed to isolate. And that's part of the guidance. That's in the guidance. Yeah. That piece of what to do when you have symptoms.
So that goes out to their primary care provider or whoever that's requesting the test. They're going to give them that information about they're going to be tested, and until they know the results, they need to isolate.
That will be communicated to the families.
Okay. Go ahead, Bob. Do you have other questions? I'm done interrupting.
Well, you know, this last topic about testing of the school kids really just feeds into the long-term handicap we've had from the beginning of this. And I have to say, I'm not finding it very reassuring. I know that kids of that age are perhaps not affected as prevalently, but there's someone else.
We're getting a lot of conversation from somebody.
Yeah.
Okay, it's probably on my end, so I'll mute.
Oh, but sorry, Rick. Okay.
Is that better?
Yep.
Yes, thank you. But I'm finding that very unreassuring, Rick. How do we know what's happening until after it's too late? Sorry about the noise at my end. The cat is trying really hard to get some attention over here, I think. I don't know. It sounds like a rather futile effort in this case. And so many times, maybe every time, we've tried to reopen some aspect of our society. We've gotten blindsided by something we should have anticipated, primarily because of inadequate testing. But anyway, you spoke about the backlog of positive case reports coming from the state. Did those come in a bolus, and are they responsible for the huge numbers that we've seen published the last couple days, Rick? Or are they sort of backdated so that they're attributed to the appropriate time when the test was done?
Oh, no, that accounts for a part of, yeah, a part of the significant increase in numbers, at least over this past weekend.
Do you have any idea what part of that increase is attributable?
Yeah, what the numbers were. I can ask. Hold on, I'll try to find out. So unfortunately, I don't have an accurate number for you, but there were at least some cases going back to mid-July that we received this weekend.
Is the glitch resolved so that we won't be doing this?
Well, that is a great question. So, if you ask me, when it comes to technology and data tracking on that scale, I don't know if I'd be confident to say that the glitch is ever resolved, just based on our ongoing experience with it. But I know that the CDPH is now paying quite a bit of attention to it. And they're constantly, at the state level, they're constantly trying to update CalReady.
So with the interim people that they have put in place, since both the director and the public health officer have resigned, mm-hmm. are they people that are familiar with this and will start to attack this problem, if you will?
So the attack started about a week ago, I would say, in earnest. They've been trying, essentially on an ongoing basis since the pandemic started, to upgrade. But a really concerted effort was begun about a week ago.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll just have to follow it and
right. Like many,
it gets resolved in right. some point. I mean,
right, like many
deals with data.
Exactly.
The importance of accuracy and how accurate that data needs to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And likewise, anything dealing with information technology There are always, you know, hiccups of some kind that have to be dealt with.
Okay. Any other questions for Rick?
No, I have a further one.
Sure, go ahead, Bob.
Rick, do we have any idea of the significance of living in a county that on every border has other counties with higher recent positive test numbers? I noticed today that Kern County, which is unfortunately sort of the poster child for this, currently has three times the number of positive cases per 100,000 people that we do. And maybe a week ago, it had like seven times. Other counties, Fresno, Tulare, Kings County for a while, all had at least twice as many per unit of population as we do. And I know so many people from those areas love to come to our coast. And right. The weather, you sure can't blame them. But do we have any idea of the impact of having these visitors coming from areas where there's more disease?
Do you
suspect that it's significant, perhaps?
Right. No. Yeah, I do not. There's no data I can point to.
Is there any data on simply the number of visitors from out of the county who come here on a nice weekend?
Not that I know of. I will say that we have seen spikes in activity in the wake of holiday weekends.
Yes.
That's been a recurring theme, but that's about all I can think of to point to. Then we could look at hotel and motel occupancy rates, but I just don't know what those numbers look like.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rick.
Sure.
Well, and I would think that is extremely difficult to track, Rick, because a lot of people come here for a day, and then they're back to wherever. They're tested in the county where they live. And so unless you somehow tracked their travel patterns, it would be almost impossible to look at that at all.
Right.
Okay. Susan, Lynn, Jean, do you have any questions for Rick?
I did. Kind of back to the number of schools that have applied for the waiver.
Yes.
They're all very, you said, private schools. So is it just harder for the public schools to get their paperwork into you, or because they're larger, or what? Why do you think that they're not applying?
So they are larger. I think there are more, labor concerns at play. And I think that's, yeah.
So you do hate that more schools will apply?
Well, I'm not, my answer to that would be we'll see. Okay. The reality is because the natural advent of the school year is either upon us or approaching very soon, I don't anticipate that we're going to receive many more applications than we've already received.
Okay.
I mean, we might, and I might be surprised, but I don't think it's likely.
Well, thank you for that. I did have one other concern, and that was when you were talking about the FluVax, that not only the children, but our elderly population.
Of course, yeah.
I'm concerned because they are staying at home. They are not going out to places where they could or may have formerly received FluVax. And I know the community, there'd be a lot of older people that would show up at that, but they're not wanting to be in groups. So is there a plan to reach, or is there some health commission can help them, help you reach to them?
I'm sure, yes. And the question is, what will our campaign look like in terms of public outreach and communication? So it's certainly front of mind for us, but I don't know. I don't know of any specifics around what it will look like. At the time, you know, it's around now that we really need to make those plans. So I think a lot of that will become clearer over the next month. Right now, I just don't know what it will look like. And I agree that outreach to our older population is a big part of it. On the other hand, so based on the Southern Hemisphere's experience with the flu this year, they were surprised at how well they did. And a lot of it is related to the fact that folks have stayed home more than they otherwise would. So that I took as an encouraging sign. But our country seems to be an outlier in other ways. So we will see how we do.
Thank you.
Last chance. Any other questions?
Just one more, Mary Jean. It's more a comment, Rick, than anything else, I guess, or a suggestion. But just going back to the school waivers, once the county approves those waivers for particular schools that have checked off all the boxes, would the public health department notify the county pediatricians at all of the list of schools that will be going back, so that it's just something that pediatricians can maybe keep an eye out for? They always usually, you know, ask kids like what school they're going to and that sort of thing. But I don't know if that would be helpful in any way in terms of, you know, getting ahead of things. So if a pediatrician happens to know that a kid is going to in-person school and they come in with symptoms, if that's something that, you know, they could just sort of know of or be aware of, and there might be just better coordination in terms of, you know, notification and that sort of thing. But that's just an idea.
Right. I think that is a great idea. All of the schools who have submitted waiver applications are required to post those applications online at a baseline. And so that information will be public, but I really like your idea.
Yeah, they just, you know, I mean, everybody's always busy generally, and certainly doctors who have private practices are super busy. So maybe just an email to them would be a good idea. And then the one other sort of comment I have around the school waiver piece is, you know, I think these schools that will be granted waivers, there is a potential opportunity to do this right, and for them to serve as a model for when public schools eventually reopen. And I think if they're presented or communicated their waiver acceptance in that way of really sort of emphasizing that, you know, if they are doing this right, they can really be a good example for the rest of the community, might sort of, you know, help give them a little extra oomph to actually follow what they say they're going to do, and not, you know, lax on any of that stuff. So, but I do think if people do it right, and if there's, you know, close monitoring and good working with, you know, public health liaisons, there's potential, essentially to sort of be a pilot for what public school will eventually become. So I think just, you know, communicating that we're all in this together and you have an opportunity to be an example, may help sort of boost their efforts or be more committed.
Right.
Good comment. Good idea, Tamar. All right. Well, Rick, thanks for staying, being with us. You always bring us good information. Again, remember that we're eager to help if we can, but we need to know how we can help you in a, you know, in
right.
a most beneficial way. So let us know what your needs are and how we might be able to help. And if something comes up with, you know, the campaign for flu vaccine or whatever, and we can help out, we would certainly, we're willing to do that.
Okay, great. Okay. Yes, thank you all.
You're welcome. Thank you. So let's go back to commissioner updates. Did Jean gave hers? Were you finished with yours, Jean, or did you have any other meetings you had attended?
No, but I did find the phone number for the Central California Legal Services Incorporated, and it's 1-800-675-8001, extension 1271. So people can get some information, just call in and ask questions. And they said there's no bad question. It just call and see if they can help, you know, with the medical debt that someone might have. So the other thing that the group asked for, Adult Services Policy Council, is they would like to have a speaker from the Health Commission come and speak with them. But they're pretty much booked up until the end of the year. But maybe at the beginning of the year, we can decide what we would like to present. What we do as the Health Commission, because they would like to hear from us. So we have time to talk about it. But they were asking, you know, if we could have someone come and speak. I could speak, but, you know, is there anybody else that might want to, that we can put something together maybe?
Well, we do have a PowerPoint that's put together, but it's from several months ago. It would need to be updated or whatever. But a good thought. Let us know. And I'm sure somebody would be willing to do that.
Thank you.
Any other updates? I know a lot of the committees are continuing to meet, most of them virtually. Bob, anything from Tobacco Coalition?
Well, unfortunately, yeah. I missed last month's meeting, but there's another one Wednesday, so I hope to have a report next month.
Okay, good.
On my other area of concentration, Oceano Dunes, spoke with Gary Wiley a few days ago. Two issues. One is there have been reports of the dust actually being worse at times, but when they break down the data, it turns out that the wind has been much worse than it has been for the last 6 years. So when you actually look at the particulate levels, particularly at CDF station, compared to the winds at the time, it's the dust is probably decreased significantly. Gary thinks it's because of the partially completed mitigations that the State Parks has been working on. So that's encouraging news. Procedurally, State Parks has submitted their work plan for 2021, and that's currently being reviewed. I suspect there'll be a couple iterations coming out of it, but hope to have some report on that for next month as well.
Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, then let's take a look at our committee reports. Budget, legislative, I don't think Amy is with us this evening. Community education, anything, Tamar?
We will probably need to meet again to continue to discuss ways in which we can help educate the community on vaccines. So we will need to sort of continue to think a little bit there, but no additional updates.
Okay, good. Nominating committee. Jean?
Yes, we've had one person apply, got the information last week, and I'm going to call the rest of the group that's on the nominating committee tomorrow, and then Candace when she gets back from vacation, so that we can either have a Zoom meeting or we can, I talked with Michael earlier, and we could maybe even do telephone calls. So once I talk with Tamar, did you want to be part of that, Mary Jean?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay, and then we can make a recommendation for the next meeting.
Okay, good. And that leaves us with one remaining consumer seat.
And
I do want to let the commission know that I was in communication with an individual today who said that they will be emailing in an application for a consumer seat tomorrow. This was actually, we lucked out, just someone that was viewing our website.
Oh, good. It will be nice to have a full commission. Looks like we're near that. So good.
We're getting close. Thank you, Michael.
All right, before we adjourn for this evening, one quick thing. I know that we haven't had programs our last few meetings for a number of different reasons. The most obvious is the way that we've been meeting. But I think we can move forward and start to have some programs. We're obviously going to be meeting virtually for the next few months, unless there's some dramatic change that surprises all of us. So I looked at what we had planned from our last planning meeting, and I noticed that in September, our topic we had suggested food security, which is probably a good topic right now with everything that's going on. I know that there are more people that are certainly in need. So I'll ask Amy, she had brought up that as a topic. I'll ask Amy and probably Ginger, she's our resident dietitian, nutritionist person, if they'll work on getting a short program put together for us. So when we meet in September, we will have a short presentation of some kind. Okay. Does anybody else have anything else to offer this evening before we adjourn? If not, thank
Mary
you.
Jean?
Yes, Bob, go ahead.
May I just editorialize?
Yes.
I'm kind of concerned about the presentation regarding the school opening waivers. It appears we have no systematic way of measuring the effect that bringing these kids together is going to have on the community load of this virus. It's probably an unsolvable problem right now, given the difficulty, and that's a nice word, it's a polite word, but the difficulty we have getting adequate testing in a timely fashion so broadly in this pandemic. But I find it rather concerning that we could end up plunging into this kind of blindly again. Just like we have with every other reopening.
So, any suggestions how we might approach that?
No. It's a terrible political social dilemma for everybody, and I'd certainly recognize that.
Well, I just want to kind of agree with Tamara that this is an opportunity in small numbers to pilot something. And if they put in the way for what they're doing, so we'll see what works and what doesn't work. So it's one of those things that has, we have caution, but you know, it is an opportunity for a pilot in small numbers.
Well, I would agree that that is an opportunity, but if we don't have any way of monitoring them or getting that stuff from them, we're not going to know.
Well, I think surveillance will be important, right? I think
yeah.
There will need to be periodic check-ins. There will need to be, you know, just general surveillance of ensuring that schools are doing what they said that they would do. And so there would probably need to be some on-site checks, you know, and there would need to be some options available to public health that if, you know, they do an on-site check and they, you know, aren't complying or aren't doing what they said that they would do, that, you know, I'm sure a warning system would need to be built in, but if you don't comply, then you lose that ability to be in person. So, you know, or some sort of standard language that says, you know, public health reserves the right to do a check-in at any time, and if you're not complying, you'll lose your waiver, you know, just to make it a little more serious for schools. I think, you know, especially since they are private schools, that my one concern is that they're used to not necessarily complying with too much of whatever the standard is.
Yeah.
Having at least some sort of giving public health departments some sort of authority beyond, you know, just make, you know, the state checkoff list. And I just think that there needs to be something there. And if there isn't bandwidth from public health to be able to do that because they're pulled in so many different directions already, you know, is there a way that there could be a community task force of some sort where you've got a public health person who's on there, but maybe you have a parent from each of those 11 schools in addition to their school liaison? You know, is there a way to build a little bit more of a community effort to make sure that there are more people on the hook or making sure that they're continuing to comply? I don't know, but
well, what we might be able to do at this point is, because we know what some of those concerns are, as individuals we could send our concerns to the public health department, send them to Rick, to Dr. Rosen, you know, and then
we haven't read the waivers and what they have in there. And most of those waivers that are delineated within the state have all those things built into them. So once they do not meet the waiver, which is kind of a standard, then they're supposed to be shut down. And I just, in other states, have a grandson. There was one child in a camp that tested positive immediately. In that waiver, it said everyone was shut down for 2 weeks. So as you just start reading the waivers, you can look to see if those things are built in, Robert. So,
well, they're built into the waivers, but there still has to be monitoring and enforcement.
But like I'm saying, the state sees the kids that come up, and then they're shut down. They are closed.
Oh, they see they know the children that are enrolled at the school, and when they see the positive?
Well, I mean, I'd have to check to see what the waiver said. Yeah, I don't know. Be interesting to see what those waivers are, and they are public law knowledge. And like you said, we can personally check if we are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think those things are in place. I think the biggest piece is more the prevention, right? So making sure that schools are going to do what they're saying that they will do to keep you know, okay, exposure limited.
Any more comments?
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you all for this evening. Our next meeting will be September 14th. We will see you all then. Thank you.